What's up? This is Movies On Up. This summer, death decides how, fate decides when. My co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella, and I decide when you get a podcast, and we usually try and do it every week. And this week is our final installments episode, I guess. Maybe coincidentally, because this is the final installment of Movies On Up.
Perhaps the last one this week.
For a final time, that's Dave. I'm Ryan. Our tagline, our final tagline ever in the history of Movies On Up. This summer, death decides how, fate decides when. If you want to solve the puzzle for our last, our final, our fifth and final tagline contest, send your guess to us in one of the following ways. MoviesOnUp@gmail.com. That would be email. You can Facebook your guess to us, Facebook.com/MoviesOnUp, or tweet your answer directly at Dave, at MoviesOnUp on the Twitter, if you are correct. And if we choose you,
I will take a package from my house to the mailbox until it reaches its final destination of your prize-winning hands.
Until it gets into all five fingers on your prize-winning hand. Between the two of us, I think we've pretty much just given you the answer there. So just send us an email, and I guess you'll get a prize package full of something. We've said that this month we're sort of running on fumes.
We were burnout in October.
Yeah, so I'll cut us a little slack. We'll get our shit back together for December.
Maybe.
Perhaps. But The Mockingjay Part 1, we're starting the final installment of that series. It's the final part one of that
series. We're really short on ideas.
Yeah. Basically, we just didn't want to do another top five. Like, give us your top five.
J-Law movies.
Yeah.
Josh Hutcherson movies.
I was trying to think of the Hemsworth that's in that one. What the hell's his
name?
Liam? Is that it? Yeah. Sure. Whatever. That probably would have been a very short list. But instead, Dave decided to open it up to our favorite movies that are the final installment. Now, to me, that meant, all right, take a look at all the sequels that you like. Now, is there one after that? Okay, well then, throw it out. It's like a flow chart thing happened here. If there wasn't one after it, then I could consider it.
See, here's where I went. My rule was there had to be at least three. It had to be at least...
That's a problem.
It had to be at least the third of something, because, okay, whatever, the second ones, who cares? It had to be at least three of something. If there was a upcoming sequel announced, I didn't. I didn't count remakes as further installments. That's about it. There were times where I let a crappy subpar sequel take away. Like Last Crusade would have been in my top five. Damn you, Crystal Skull.
Yep. So, that's an also-ran, but it's technically shouldn't be an also-ran because it doesn't count because there was another one after that.
And I explained to Ryan, like, separate trilogies I counted. I think the original Star Wars trilogy, 4, 5, and 6, I think that counts on its own. 1, 2, and 3, I feel like that counts on its own.
But we couldn't have made the argument that Last Crusade wraps up that first Indiana Jones trilogy.
No, okay. Because Crystal Skull didn't kick off the second one. Because
it sucked.
I know.
Real bad.
It didn't kick off the Mutt Williams franchise.
So let's kick off this.
Oh, and also,
shit,
I didn't feel like it had to be the best one in the series.
Yeah, most of mine aren't. There's one of them. There's two of them. My number two and my number one, I would argue, are the best in the series, but we'll get there when we get there. I am dying to kick off this particular franchise with your fifth favorite whatever it is.
My final installment is the end of a trilogy, and like I said, not the best one in the trilogy because I feel like in this trilogy, the second one was the strongest one. It is 1983's Star Wars Episode VI, Return of the Jedi. I love this movie. I know diehard Star Wars fans and people in general criticize this for not being that good of a movie. I like it.
No, I mean, people get pissed because it's got teddy bears in it, but I mean, that's really kind of a minor thing.
They were on Endor. How do you go to Endor and not have the Ewoks in it?
Well, I don't know. When you're creating Endor, just don't put Ewoks there.
Something's got to live there. Ewoks lived on Endor. You're going to do Endor. If you don't want Ewoks in there, go to a different planet. That simple.
It's a moon.
Whatever.
All right.
Moons are planets. I liked it a lot. I thought it was...
I started off kind of agreeing with you, and now you've just pissed me off.
I liked it because it was different than the other two, whereas Empire was your darker story, far superior movie. Empire was definitely the best of the three, I think. Three kind of took it away from that dark, and it was fun, and it world-building. Like, it explored a lot more worlds than even the first one. I thought it was a lot of fun. Like, I think of the three, it was the most fun. Probably the weakest story-wise of the three. You have everything going on. You got the Ewoks. You got, you know, it's a trap. You got Akbar. You got the Lando Calrissian redemption. Like, I love the climax of this movie.
I like how the Lando Calrissian redemption is the redemption that you focus on for Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was an asshole in the second one.
You're right.
Now he's like, hey, I'm not a douche anymore.
I'm not an asshole anymore.
Yeah, so.
I think there was another character that had a pretty similar story arc. It just took a little bit more movies.
Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about. But I will always.
Wicket.
I use terms that I make up and expect other, like Godzilla trailer and the Gosling.
The McAvoy turn.
McAvoy turn. Jedi Climax is one of my favorite.
I've had one or two of those.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things in movies where a lot of action movies build up to like one final battle and that's it. You build up to this. This builds up to three final battles all going on at the same time. And I love that. Like, I love that. Oh, there's all these three that this has to happen for this to be effective, for this to be effective. So they're all three relying on each other. And I thought it led to an awesome, one of the most exciting, like, final acts of a movie. And you do see it. Not everybody tries to pull it off, but I feel like it's pulled off sometimes, but never quite as well as Return of the Jedi. And I consider it the end of that trilogy because I spent a large part of my life.
That was it. From 1983 through,
for
was
15
movie,
years. Yeah. So, yeah, Return of the Jedi is my fifth favorite final installment.
I think it's pretty rich that we're going to have this list and you're going to put the Star Wars movie on there, but whatever. That's fine. My number five is from a franchise that's near and dear to your heart. It is 1994's Wes Craven's New Nightmare, directed by, spoiler alert, Wes Craven, starring Robert Englund, Heather Langenkamp, and a fellow that we talked glowingly about last month, Miko Hughes. I am not in love with the Nightmare series, which is really going to piss Dave off because I put this one so low. When we did our list last year where I think we looked at our five favorite Nightmare movies, I hope this one was pretty high on the list because I feel like I may like it the most. If not the most, probably the second most.
I think it was number one on both of our lists, or at least number two. The original might have been number one.
Yeah, I could see
it was one or two
one
on all of them, on our mine, yours, and Westy.
Those are the only ones that count. I think that this one would make the list based on concept alone. I think it's the idea is kind of meta before meta was a thing. Freddy Krueger, who had always existed in the movies and was fueled by bad dreams of the Children of Elm Street, becomes a reality and stalks the people that brought him to the screen in the first place, including the guy that played him. I think it's kind of an interesting concept, which has been done by Craven even a couple times after that, and I don't think it's definitely never been as impactful as it was in 1994. I mean, sometimes you kind of mentioned it with the Blair Witch, like, man, is this real, the found footage thing? I don't quite know. I think I was just getting to the point in 94 where I wasn't necessarily afraid of horror movies anymore. Cause it was like, oh, well, that's fake. I could differentiate between real and fake. But then there was this movie. It was a fake movie, but about real people and this fake movie character killing real people. I was like, oh, shit, I never considered that. And then it kind of scared the crap out of me again. But I do love some of the nods in this movie to the first movie, like Julie's death, the babysitter, mirroring Tina's death from 84, done just as well, if not even better, in 94. I love it. I think it was a very original way to tackle a sequel, and maybe not even just a sequel, but to like wrap up a series that had been running for so long at that point, provided a little bit of an extra bow on it.
Yeah, this was higher on my list, but we'll pretend it's my number four right now. And what I loved about this is that where the Nightmare series, what it struggled with is the same that other horror franchises have struggled with, is how do you reinvent it and keep it fresh, but keep it the same enough for people to see? And you saw that with Nightmare 2, where they try to bring Freddy into the real world to kind of add something new. And then they go back, you know, 3 through Final Nightmare or whatever. They're retreading the same ground. this is something completely different. And this had come after, you know, the last couple were kind of disappointments. So Nightmare wasn't, it was kind of an afterthought now. This came and just breathed new life into it. I really liked the idea of this movie. It's one of the most creative, definitely one of the most creative slasher movies out there. One of the most creative, like, horror movies. It was made for fans of the first one. Like you said, there's so many, it sounds like a douchey thing to do by paying homage to yourself, but he did, and it was, and generally I'm not a fan service.
I was just going to say, I think it's kind of fan service.
And I'm not a fan service guy, but this one.
But it works in here.
It works perfectly in here because this whole movie.
Of course Freddy would do that.
Yes, this whole movie is kind of fan service in a way because the people that are going to go see this right away are the diehard Nightmare fans. Because how are you going to sell this premise to somebody who's just been tired of the last five Nightmare movies? So I think Craven knew what he was doing here, and the execution is flawless. It's a good movie. You know, I don't remember if I put it one or two, but I know it's this and the original are my two favorite Nightmare on Elm Street movies. They're bookended. I mean, I like Dream Warriors a lot, but if Dream Warriors didn't exist, they're bookended. These are my two favorites. So that's my number four.
Yeah, your number four. My number four is, this is the only time where I guess I don't follow what was your unwritten rule about it has to be at least a trilogy. And it is just the second in a series that there's only two. I had hoped for a while that this movie would not be able to be on this list because there would be a third, but it does not look like we're going to get a Ghostbusters 3. So I'm going to have to stick with the second one from 1989, directed by Ivan Reitman, starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson, Rick Moranis, and just probably just go on listing the cast because I love them all. This movie obviously suffers from not being as great as the first one. It's not as good. It's not as great. The first Ghostbusters is goddamn great. Obviously, a lot of sequels to movies kind of fail to reach the mark of the first one. And this one does. But it doesn't mean that it's a bad movie. I actually think that the movie holds up pretty well on a joke-for-joke level for most of the movie. The beginning of the movie, where we catch up with the Ghostbusters, is one of my favorite, like, beginnings of a sequel ever. Because you have the Ghostbusters on such a high after saving New York and quite possibly the world from certain destruction. Where do we see them? Venkman's got like a public access Jerry Springer kind of show. Stance and Winston are doing birthday parties where they're getting booed because they're not He-Man. They've got the boombox and they're literally doing a dog and pony show. I absolutely love it because it really just sets the tone for like, this is where you thought everything was going to be, but no, we're going to start somewhere completely different. And even as a kid, I thought that was really funny. The movie does sort of suffer from the last act. I think almost everyone involved has pretty much acknowledged the fact that they didn't know how to end the movie. And I don't think that necessarily the Statue of Liberty marching down to the art museum was the best way to go, but it's the way that they went. But like you said, you don't like to let maybe sequels ruin how you feel about the rest of a franchise. I don't like to let the end of Ghostbusters 2 ruin how I feel about the rest of the movie, because I love the rest of the movie. And to this day, Ghostbusters is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I feel good about putting, in terms of my favorite movies to end a franchise, which this did, just two movies, I still love it, so it still goes on the list.
Yeah, and I mean, this is relevant. Like, yeah, it breaks my rule, my unwritten rule of three, but it kind of...
It's the rule of two.
Yeah, but I mean, in this one, it's kind of... Look at some of my favorite movie franchises that I was unable to put on here. RoboCop 2, I think, is equally as great as RoboCop 1. RoboCop 3 is terrible. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1 and 2, I love both of them. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, terrible.
Wait, you're acknowledging that now?
If they'd have made one, it would have been terrible.
Would have been terrible.
The Michael Bay one. It was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3. It was terrible. Much of my life has wanted a Ghostbusters 3, but if we'd have gotten a Ghostbusters 3 a couple years later, judging by how the end of 2 went, would 3 have just continued that? And so maybe Back to the Future, another one. I hate the third one. First two were fantastic. So maybe it's better. We're in a better world because we never got that Ghostbusters 3, and you know what?
We didn't get it in 1992. But if we'd have gotten it in 2010,
I mean, I'm still excited. Like, Paul Feig doing an all-female Ghostbusters, I'm still on board. Like, I still like the idea. If it's executed well, I'm into it. And I'll still see a new Ghostbusters, even if the original
of
cast.
Of course.
Yeah, so, you know, reboot it, continue. I don't care. Like, there's no reason to just make a female team that just takes place in the world of Ghostbusters. They don't have to be...
be a franchisee.
That's exactly my thought. It's just... they were successful, so they franchised out Ghostbusters, and Kristen Wiig's dad dies, and now she and her friends have to save the world. So,
up to Boston.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, that was your number four.
It was.
My number three will be what used to be my number four. A lot of what I said about New Nightmare is going to be relevant, but not to the glowing extremes, which is why
this is weird, because this movie's higher on your
yes,
list.
Yes, yes. It's way weird. You would think this would have been my number four if I had to redo the list.
You would think so.
But, very, very similar, a franchise very much like Nightmare on Elm Street, where, you know, your first one establishes something, you try to build off of that, you might have a misstep by not having the character that everybody loves in one of them, and then you keep going and it's just retreading the same thing, and then you decide, you know what, well, yeah, we called that last one the last, like, it implied that it was the last one, but fuck it, let's send them to space, and that's where Jason X comes in. Much like New Nightmare, New Nightmare invented it in like a creative way. Jason X just went a completely different direction and just made the same movie in space, but much more tongue-in-cheek. Not that the Friday the 13th series was ever accused of taking itself too seriously, but Jason X really took everything about it and just kind of did a lot of winks to the camera with the whole opening where Jason's on this spaceship and they have him having dreams essentially where he's killing people, like with the two girls in a sleeping bag.
Yeah, like that's actually at the end of the movie. Like, the beginning is Dr. David Cronenberg shows up to cryo-freeze him. But yeah, I mean, you're right with the self-referential winks. Like,
yeah.
I think you're looking for, are you looking for this? And he hands him the machete.
And then they kill him and, oh no, he's on the med chart, so it's Uber Jason.
So those robots that were from the G.I. Joe movies rebuild him.
It's different in a different way that New Nightmare was, but I feel like it breathed new life into Friday the 13th just because it was, I didn't feel like I was watching 3 through 9 again. I felt like I was watching something new, but still the same, which is what New Nightmare did to a much better degree. So it is odd that that movie was ranked lower than this one on my list. But I really like Jason X, and I didn't count Freddy vs. Jason.
Right.
Obviously, that would have eliminated my number four and my number three if I counted that. But I kind of looked at that as a new chapter because I was hoping that we would get more. I was hoping Freddy vs. Jason would become its own franchise. Sure. Yeah, I put Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th. I know October's over.
Not when we're recording this.
Yeah, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Eat that.
But
November.
Yeah, so I have two of the most, my favorite horror franchises on there.
I like the Friday franchise much more than I like the Nightmare franchise, but it was the Nightmare one that made my list and not Friday. I do like Jason X. I like it an awful lot. And I'm one of the weirdos that likes Jason Goes to Hell for what it was. Again, that was one that I felt was kind of in on the joke. I love the way that one ends with Jason sort of being this space slug that finally gets killed, and they finally, through some mystic dagger, are able to kill him. And then you have Freddy's hand that comes up out of the ground and pulls the mask down. I love that. Like, after the New Line synergy, I thought that was a really awesome way to wrap up that franchise and tie it together. With, you know, I feel like they were sort of synonymous with each other. They ran about the same time. And it literally is, you know, Freddy and Jason are like the top two in anybody of our age group, you know, your favorite killers of all time. And I agree with you. The Freddy versus Jason does seem like it's its own thing. If not, where would you have counted that? Is that like a sequel to The Nightmare or the...
Yeah, and it almost feels like Jason X is kind of cheating because 9 should have been that...
Yeah.
That last one.
Oh, yeah.
But then I went ahead and just went with Jason X. Because Jason X feels like something completely different.
It was. My number three is a movie that I actually like the franchise, though I think that if you just listen to me talk on this podcast, you may think that I hate it. because there is a certain level of vitriol that I have for the first one, which came out in 2006. It's a fine movie. Was it the best picture of the year? No. So I get a little bit of a burr in my ass, but I don't think anyone has accused 2006's Rocky Balboa of being the best picture of 2006. Directed and starring Sylvester Stallone, also Antonio Tarver, and Milo Ventimiglia speaking out of the entire half of his mouth. I don't know if it makes the list just because until this movie, Rocky V was so bad, and that's what we left that franchise on, that had come from, you know, Rocky and Rocky II, I think people still are, you know, think of those as very good movies. And then it fell so far to five. And in that movie, you had this idea of trying to have Rocky pass the torch, but it failed on every level in that movie. And as big as a joke and a failure as that movie was, I think that Rocky Balboa actually succeeds and manages to have every bit, if not maybe even more of the heart that was shown in the original 30 years after the fact. You've got Rocky, who's got to come to terms with a lot of things. His strained relationship with his now grown son, which had been a storyline in some of the other movies. Life after boxing, which he sort of dealt with in five until he became a trainer. And that kind of mitigated things. And then maybe more specifically, life after Adrian. She dies. I think one of the opening shots of the movie is him at the graveyard and you see her tombstone. So spoiler alert, she dies. I think you come across some folks from Rocky's past, like Spider Rico. I thought that was one of the best cameos in the movie, was one of the guys that Spider Rico's a bum. You see him obviously down on his luck. Rocky owns a restaurant and I think he's like a busboy or something. But it just, not in the same way that, maybe New Nightmare or Jason X has a certain level of fan service, but there were definitely things that connected the first movie to the last one, and the character of Marie, I think it's the girl that he yells at for smoking in the first one, kind of becomes a larger part in this one. There are definitely parallels between this and the first movie. Rocky's fighting who is considered the best fighter in the world, and everybody else thinks that this guy's soft, and their fight becomes a publicity stunt. This time, it's kind of sparked by a computer simulation that I think is pretty legit. We kind of try and compare eras in sports all the time, and now we're sort of able to do that with a lot of the sports stats, computer number nerds that we have now. So I don't necessarily feel like it was dated or just kind of wedging in technology just to do it. I actually kind of like that, and I still do. And I think that the science behind the fight, how they train Rocky to fight this kid, seems pretty legit for what an old ass man would want to do. He's just like, well, there's no way I'm going to be able to last all 12 rounds. I'm just going to have to be able to just hit the shit out of him about three times and kind of wrap it up from there. And I think that the little bits in the movie after the final decision of the fight really wrap up the series in a way that maybe is even better than the series actually deserves. A couple really good moments in there when Rocky gives the speech to his son. They brought it back into some commercials. Now, I can't remember what the product's for, but it's that's how winning is done. That's where that one comes from. And I do like the fact that it's kind of, as much as the first Rocky may have been actually stolen from a man's life, this one kind of inspired by the George Foreman-Michael Moore fight, where Foreman came out of retirement as an old-ass man. He became the champ at 45 when he knocked Michael Moore the fuck out. So it's obviously Rocky's like the quintessential underdog. And I think that five was just such a shitstorm that I'm glad that he got to do this one. And I don't know that we needed another Rambo. He probably should have just let things lie with Rocky Balboa, because I think it's a legit pretty good
movie.
Those
were same year, at least within a year of each
other. They were very close, yeah.
What I like about Rocky Balboa is that it almost makes 2 through 5 irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like, you can watch...
Or 3 through 5, I would say.
If you watch Rocky 1 in the theater, and then you got in, like, a car accident and got put into a coma, and
you got frozen in carbonite, or... Yeah. In whatever they froze Jason in.
And you woke up in, what was this, 2006?
Yes-ish.
And so
30 years later.
He's like, oh, dude, I saw Rocky. It was so good. Is there anything else? And you're like, yeah, but... And you just show him Rocky Balboa, and it's like, oh, that's a good 1-2 movie. Like, I like that. I feel like that wraps it up well. Like, you don't need the middle ones. I mean, maybe 2. because I like the idea of ending with Rocky. It's like, oh, he's the champ 30 years later. You know, you don't.
He didn't win the belt in the first one. He lost.
Whatever. But it was huge for him.
Details.
Yeah, Tui won.
Yeah. That's why I said you might need the second one in there.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, whatever. Yeah. I liked of the two, though,
yeah.
I actually liked Rambo more. That whatever it was called, John Rambo.
I think it was called Rambo.
Rambo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, he wants to make another one of both of these.
Another Rambo movie I'd watch.
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted. But I don't need another Rocky because I think it's just let sleeping dogs lie.
And I mean, there was
job.
Talk of doing, I don't know if it's still going through, but Michael B. Jordan was going to play Apollo Creed's like grandson or something with Rocky like training him.
Yeah,
I'd watch that.
Another version of Rocky V.
Yes. I would watch that because I like Michael B. Jordan enough. My number two?
Yep.
My number two, this is one of those where I said it's not necessarily the best of the trilogy. Much like Return of the Jedi, I feel was the weakest of those three. I feel like 2009's The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest was the weakest of those three movies. But I had a hard time not putting it on here because it did wrap it up so nicely, as well as it could. I mean, based on the books, I believe Noomi Rapace as Lizbeth Salander is one of the best acting performances of our generation, at least. If not on a wider scope, I just feel like her embodiment of the character and how consistently dark and sordid she was able to be for three movies without really missing a beat, I feel is damn impressive. And Hornet's Nest, it's not, you know, of the three, it's not my favorite by far, but
again, you're adapting the source material. I mean, my favorite book was the first one.
Yes.
And I would have been okay like if we didn't necessarily get anything after that, but there's been two successful books. You got to make the movies.
But I like the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I didn't like the American version all that much. I didn't feel like Rooney Mara. I thought she did well, but it's hard to compare.
She's no Noomi.
It's hard to compare. I mean, it's really hard. And I thought Rooney did a fine job, but I just feel like Noomi did such an amazing job in three movies and consistently that she just nailed it in all of them. And I couldn't leave this movie off just because, you know, I do love these movies. They're movies that are weird to say I love them.
I think a lot of people really dig the story.
They're
weird
to say I enjoy them.
It's like, dark.
It's dark, but they're well done.
Yeah.
The books are cool. The movies are pretty solid adaptations of the books. And they're really dark. They're really well done. As pieces of cinema or movies, I think they're really, really well done. And I think from a performance standpoint, her performance is just something special to watch.
We've been doing this podcast for nigh upon.
And that's the most pretentious I've ever sounded.
2.5 years, yeah. And that's probably the first time that phrase has ever been uttered. As pieces of cinema. And it's in reference to the
well, because it's
Millennium
a foreign
trilogy.
Movie, so I'm smarter for talking about it.
That's true. I do feel like you should have had some kind of scarf or ascot on for that.
What'd you call me?
I called you a scarf. My number two is also a number three, and I'm glad that you brought up that trilogy because it's so, so super dark, and I would have felt really weird like trying to go into another really, really dark place like a child's daycare, which is where the toys from Toy Story 3 get shipped in the finale of that trilogy from 2010, starring Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, and Ned Beatty. If there's one thing I think that always tends to sink any or almost any finale, be it book, film, TV, or otherwise, it is the ending. It's that finality of there is no more. And everyone has their own idea of what they think should happen, what they want to happen, what would be the best thing to have happen. And are you able to wrap up all of the stories that you've spent however many years or installations weaving? Can you tie all those up together? Are the characters left in a place that you'd like to see them in to where you feel good about it? And I do think that this is where most things tend to fail But Toy Story succeeds absolutely wonderfully. At least people of my age group sort of watched Andy grow up and grew up about with him. And you kind of could see where the role of your toys and of these specific toys kind of changes as you get older. I think that after initially feeling abandoned, the toys are kind of able to end up in a place that maybe had one of our co-hosts, I won't say which one, it was me, a bit teary-eyed at the end. I think it's the perfect example of how to end a tremendously successful and beloved franchise. It terrifies me, the fact that they might do another one, but this movie, perfect ending. I mean, there are endings that are good. There are endings that are great. This is a perfect ending. I never imagined that they would be able to end it as well as they did. I was kind of maybe getting prepared to be a little bit dissatisfied with what they were going to do, but I guess that's my own fault for doubting those folks. They make some pretty decent movies. But this, by far, it's not the movie that I like the most on my list. It's definitely my favorite Toy Story movie, and I think it has the best ending to wrap up a franchise. And if you ever need to figure out how to do an ending right, this is where I would send you for research.
My number one, it's a part two of a number seven, which ends up being a part eight overall. It is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows part two. It's the weaker of the two Deathly Hallows. Like, I like Deathly Hallows part one better. But for as important as the Harry Potter movies were to me, I came on late. Half-Blood Prince was the first one that I actually saw in theaters. But I love this franchise so much. And when you think of a, you know, final installment, Deathly Hallows 2 was really, really, really good. And how do you wrap up and something that you've invested? You know, I wasn't there for the whole 10 years or so or whatever, but I had invested a good chunk of my life into Harry Potter, and I felt like it delivered. It was the ending I wanted. I mean, yeah, it did have source material to work with, so I
really know. Was it based off was it a remake or something?
There was some notes that she wrote down,
magazines or something.
Yeah, she outlined the whole thing.
Okay,
but I couldn't not do this. I mean, it's rare to find a franchise that has, outside of Nightmare and Friday the 13th, that has that eight movies to where I'm by the eighth one, I'm as excited as I've been the whole time. And you know, I was at Half-Blood Prince opening night, Deathly Hallows 1 opening night, Deathly Hallows 2. Like, it got to a point where once I jumped on the Harry Potter train, I was into it. And I love these movies. Deathly Hallows Part 1, if you want to consider that the wrap-up, if you could combine 1 and 2 into one movie, 1 is probably the second-best movie of the entire franchise, maybe third. But Part 2 is right behind it. It's just so good, and I mean, it wrapped up everything you wanted to. There was a lot left out from the books, but you learn to grow with that. And I had seen the first four movies before I read all the books, so I wasn't as tied to the books. Like, I had been introduced to the movie universe first, so whatever. But I thought it was really good, and you're taking like 10 years of your life and saying like, okay, this is how it ends, and it's worth it. Like, it's worth the whole ride. And the kids are a little young now. I can't get them to sit through eight movies, but I cannot wait until we can just take 8 days in a row and watch every Harry Potter movie. Because the first two are weak. Like, the first two are hard to get through. But 3 through 8 are amazing. And 8, I mean, it's top 4 in that franchise. So
I think it keeps going down the longer you keep talking.
Goblet of Fire, Azkaban, Deathly Hallows 1, Deathly Hallows 2.
Why don't you just throw another one in there so you can have your bonus.
Half-Blood Prince. Top.
Okay, there it is. I was glad to finally see Edward and Bella get married, because that was something that I felt like I had been waiting for decades.
But the Voldemort battle, I mean, that, I talk about moments, and you're building up 8 movies to this moment where Harry finally takes on Voldemort, who, you know, Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort is one of the best on-screen villains ever.
Well, now we're getting into Benedict Cumberbatch territory.
You want to keep speeding ahead on this train? When you think like Cumberbatch's Khan, ways after that, Darth Vader, I think right in that second tier is Ralph Fiennes.
Is he on the same tier as
Vader.
Darth Vader? Okay.
He's Vader, right. Yeah. Okay. So they're on that, like, you know, that second or third tier behind Cumberbatch's Khan. You wait 8 movies to get to that showdown. And it's absolutely worth it. Everything builds up to it, and it leaves you satisfied.
Which is really the best thing you could hope for in something that's going to end any kind of franchise.
Yeah.
My number one, kind of weird. I mean, it is a trilogy. One character is playing the same character in the 3 movies. You don't need to see all 3 movies. I would say just stick with the third one, because they're all self-contained. It's the best of those 3. It is my favorite movie of any of the movies on my list, and it's also the oldest. So it is absolutely kind of a Ryan way to end the list. It's with Sergio Leone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly from 1966, starring Clint Eastwood, Lee Van Cleef, and Eli Wallach. It's the third in the Dollars trilogy, or the Man with a No Name trilogy. A Fistful of Dollars and A Few Dollars More are the first two. Like I said, technically, it is the end of this trilogy. You don't have to watch the other ones. They're good. If you're only going to watch one, make it this one. It has all the hallmarks of Leone's spaghetti westerns, and really westerns in general, that are tremendous, with the iconic score from Ennio Morricone. If you've heard the theme to this movie, you know the theme. You just don't know where the hell it comes from, and it comes from, the whistle comes from this movie. More backstabbing and turns that you can shake a 6-shooter at. But I think a lot of folks, at least of our age, they find Westerns boring because they don't have the action that we're used to from Rambo and from a lot of 80s action movies, because they're not. But I think that this one was just really, really cool. I mean, Eastwood, there's a particular reason that where, you know, guys like, of our age might think that Jason Statham's like the baddest ass man walking the planet. There is a generation older than us that thinks that way of Clint Eastwood, and these movies are why. It's a super cool character. He's absolutely like the perfect, I don't even want to call him an anti-hero, because he's really not. Like, everything that makes Han Solo cool is pretty much derived from Clint Eastwood in these movies. And I so much love The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's, I can watch it, and God knows it's on TV quite often. I can pick it up almost at any point and just sit back and appreciate. It's just a goddamn great movie. It just happens to fit this list because technically it's the last of a trilogy.
I kind of thought that's where you would go. I mean, what? Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back probably could have counted. Something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and Clerks 2 would have been on my list because it was the end of the Clerks trilogy. Although that's a whole nother mess. Like,
Clerks 2 was the end of the Clerks trilogy?
Well, there's a third one now that they're making, so that's the, yeah. But there's the Jersey trilogy, which is, you throw Mallrats in there, and you throw Chasing Amy, and they're like, wait, what the fuck? So I left that off just because it was a pain in the ass. And I left off all the Star Wars ones because, yeah, I like the Star Wars movies.
I wrote Revenge of the Sith down only because it was the only one of that trilogy I liked, and I barely liked it. So I
like it better than Jedi.
I don't. I did.
You're dumb.
I left it off my list just because I didn't like it more than any of those. Army of Darkness should have been higher, but that would have been a very horror-heavy list because I already had Nightmare and Friday on there.
That was on my list, but I like New Nightmare better.
Yeah, and then Return of the King, I kind of thought that would show up on your list.
Yeah, I tried to leave off the Star Wars ones, because, I mean, it would have been very easy for me to say Return of the King, Return of the Jedi, Revenge of the Sith, and then I'd have been like, ah, shit, well, I'm pretty much done. I think that if you ask me next year, as much as I like Return of the King, I may like The Hobbit, the ending of that one better. It just so happens that we haven't seen that movie yet. Maybe conspicuous by its absence, The Dark Knight Rises. I feel like that was a pretty obvious one, and that's probably why we both left it off. I think it would fall into that. It's not the best of the trilogy. I mean, by far, the second one's the best. But I still think it was serviceable to wrap things up, sort of passing the baton. But, I mean, that's That's really it for my also-rans. There are a lot of sequels that I like, but, you know, there's something after it, which kind of ruins things. I mean, I love Aliens. That would have been perfect. I love Terminator 2, but because they just keep making those.
That was my point with RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's
damn it.
All I have.
Starship Troopers.
There's like five of those now.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I like them all for what they are, but not enough to put on my list.
Next week, we celebrate Thanksgiving with, we'll explain it next week,
with a very strange episode. I think our holiday episodes always tend to get a little strange because we try and do something that sort of ties in, but it never ends up tying in. So see how well or not well we did our Thanksgiving episode. That'll be next week, but until then.
Keep it up.
I gotta pee.